Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Hell's Kitchen when we come back. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you, and how much do you want your government to know about you? You know, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. And that's because everything the government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. That's right, you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you in your person, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? The answer is yes, we can. And that's because this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and very logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how much information is being gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, call and ask for our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour program. It's entertaining. It's informational. It's informative. It's educational. Best of all, it's free. And you can call the law school right now at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the book Hell's Kitchen by Joel Wallach. It's a 1 in 100 book, and it identifies the cause of disease, the major cause. The major cause is the change from wood ashes to electric, coal, and natural gas cooking in our kitchens. You see, 100 years ago, the health of America was much better than it is today. In 1917, 60% of the population, if you tested them or asked them, were symptom-free. Of the 450 symptoms now that we associate with disease, 60% had no symptoms, none, zero, zilch. 40% had symptoms. That was the bad news. Today it's 99 to 1. It's 99 people of our society have symptoms of something. If you're just the average Joe Sixpack, there's something wrong with you. That's why you're wearing glasses. Take a look at the number of people wearing glasses. If you're wearing glasses, then obviously your eyes are not 20/20. And it got to be so bad that you had to go to an optometrist who fitted you with a pair of glasses. In fact, glasses are so normal that people wear glasses even though they don't need any magnification just to be stylish and trendish because everybody else is wearing glasses. And so we have glasses that are designer glasses. You know, it isn't because you can't see. You're wearing these glasses because they look good. It's the style of the time. And it changes every now and again. It identifies you. But the underlying reason for the glass, to start with, is because you can't see. Now, what happened to your eyes? Well, you had a vitamin A deficiency. It may be that you had some toxins that came into your body. That can do it. Now, that's a common problem that we have. People, you know, that get to be 70 years old and don't wear glasses are very, very, very rare. In fact, people that don't wear glasses are rare to start with. People that get to be 50, 60, or 70 and don't have to wear glasses, that's really That's really bizarre. That's unusual. And then we've got all of these degenerative diseases. The degenerative diseases, you know, like Parkinson's, muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, and so on. Then we have birth defects. 5% of babies born have a birth defect. That's 1 out of 20. 5%. Now, you know, it isn't an overwhelming number, but when you add all of these up, you know, all the people that wear glasses and all the people that wear hearing aids and all the people that have Parkinson's disease and all the people that have allergies and so on down the line, you add all those people up and you get 99% of the population that has something wrong with them. That's not the way God designed it. It may be the evolutionary outcome, you know, for you evolutionists out there, but the God of the Bible, the creator of the universe, he didn't design your body to be sick. He designed it to be perfectly in tune with the surrounding environment and to work perfectly for 70 years with no disease and without any malfunctions, zero malfunctions. And in the world, there are some people, isolated groups of people, who have demonstrated that. For instance, there's a group of people called Hunzas, H-U-N-Z-A, live up in the Himalayas. And so scientists went over there and said, what is it about these people that gives them such longevity? Here are people 70, 80, 90 years old, 100 years old, they don't wear glasses. Here are people 100 years old, 70, 80, 90, 100 years old. And they don't need hearing aids, they don't need glasses, they don't have any metabolic diseases, they don't have allergies. They're simple people, you know, they don't have medical doctors, they don't have science and technology. Why is it that these people are living so long? And the least common denominator with all of these isolated groups around the world, of which there's about 10, is that they all have a very high mineral content diet. They have a high concentration of minerals. Joel Wallach in Hell's Kitchen points out that there are 92 of these elements. There's vitamins, there's amino acids, there's proteins, there's minerals, and there's 92 of these essential elements that we have to have good health. If you're missing one, if we just take vitamin C out of your diet, you will get scurvy. You will have some kind of symptom. And, in fact, all disease comes from this starvation. If you're obese and overweight, you're being starved to death. You're suffering from feedlot syndrome. We call it pica. And that's all that's matter. You're being starved to death. Now, you may weigh 300 pounds. You know, people look at you and say, that guy's not starving. Well, they don't understand nutrition. That's why you're always hungry. And that's because you don't have the minerals that you need to shut off your stomach that says, I'm full. You're never full. You're always hungry. And that's exactly correct. You're always hungry for copper. You're always hungry for iron. You're hungry for potassium. And you are going to continue to eat until you reach the combination that satisfies. And it's little children do that. That's why they eat the lead paint off the walls. Children are suffering from a mineral deficiency. Now here in chapter 9, he entitles this The Vitamin Wars. This is quite a little story. And keep in mind, now you need a copy of the book for yourself. I'm not going to read the entire book to you. But I'm going to hit the high points. And the reason that Americans had relatively good health back in 1917 is because we had wood ashes that we took out of our houses, the concentration of minerals that we got from burning wood, and we're there in the ashes. We took it out and put it on the garden. Most Americans were subsistence farmers. They raised their own food. And as a result of that, they had the minerals that they needed to maintain good health in the ash from their cook stoves and from their heating stoves that they put on their gardens. Furthermore, they also ate the ash directly, which you can do today. I mean, you can take wood ash today. They used to mix it with salt and then sprinkle it on their food as they eat it. But starting about 1900, we stopped doing it. As we began to put more and more electrical stoves and conveniences and gadgets into our homes, we got rid of wood ash. It's messy. You know, let's just face it. It's dirty. It's messy. It's nasty. Now, we don't cook with wood, but we heat with wood. And I suppose that one of the reasons that I have a little better health than the average Joe Sixpack is because I have the wood ash on our garden. We eat out of our garden. And we drink the milk from our cows, and we put the ash on the ground. The ash is then picked up by the grass, which is then picked up by the cow, which is then put into her milk. And I suppose that because of our raw milk diet here, primary raw milk diet, we get plenty of vitamins and minerals. So we have good health. I'm pushing 70, and I'm in good health. Well, most of the time, you know. Now, the vitamin wars. Before written history, health care started out as a family practice. It was the mom and dad, the grandmother, grandfather, aunt, cousin, maybe a neighbor, who was a self-appointed healer. The nun or the pastor that held the child's hand, bandaged their wounds, soothed their fevered brow, or mixed and dosed the herbs and applied the poultices. Well, the natural progression from the family dispensing health care to its own members to the angels of mercy from religious sects going out and doing good works for the aged, the poor, and the religious pilgrims was a predictable series of events as bands became tribes and villages became towns and collections of towns became kingdoms and nations. Well, in the beginning of human development, these concerns about health were driven by the individual's desire to survive and true altruistic religious and scholarly motivations. However, as religions became entwined with the infrastructure and personalities of governments, kings and empires, public medicine, previously driven almost exclusively by scholarly, religious, and altruistic motivations, became a part of the power structure and filled with intrigue, greed, and driven by ego. And boy, is that the way it is in modern society today. Public health care. Health insurance. I mean, hell, your politicians are telling you you got to have health insurance. Now, I pointed out to you the last time that America has bad health. We spend more money on public education than anybody else in the world and have the dumbest kids. Now, if you can't connect the dots and figure out that throwing money at education hasn't solved the education dilemma, well then, you know, you probably are brain dead. There's probably not much hope for you. But you don't have to be real smart to put the connecting dots together, you know, to draw a line between the dots. Now take a look at healthcare. We Americans spend more money than everybody else in the world combined. 300 million people spend more money on healthcare than 6.5 billion people around the world do. And we have the worst health. And as a result of that, we have the best healthcare because we have the worst health. So, you know, if you're going to have a heart transplant, you know, America's the place to do it. But what's wrong with keeping the heart that you were born with? Mickey Mantle had plenty of money, went out and got a liver transplant, and then died 6 months later. We have great technology. Nobody else in the world can touch us. But I think Mickey Mantle would have been better served to keep his own liver. Now, these Hunza people, for instance, is one group of people. They live to be 100 more often than ordinary people. A greater proportion of their population does. And it's because they have a better diet. Americans have a terrible diet. That's why we're so sick. Now, we Americans like our potato chips and Coca-Cola, and we like our ice cream, and that's fine. You know, I'd say that a Coca-Cola once in a while probably won't hurt you. I'd say that if you drank 6 Coca-Colas a year, when I was a little kid, if I would have drank 6 or 12 Cokes in a year, I think that would have been about right. Today, Americans drink on average now. The average American, 300 million of us, drinks one a day. That's 365 a year. And we have the highest rate of diabetes as a result of it. I mean, we're the champions of diabetes. Which isn't any big deal because you can go down and you can get your shot of insulin. But, you know, if you want to become insulin dependent for the rest of your life, you know, get after it. I don't want to do that. Now, chemistry became a very powerful science in the development of clinical medicine during the 1800s. The pursuit of chemistry and biochemistry as related to health and disease led to the theory that certain diseases could be viewed as deficiency diseases caused by the lack of vital elements in our diets. The biochemical theory, now finding its way into the medical school, that disease could be caused by a deficiency, was a significant shift in the paradigm. Disease is so generally associated with positive causative agents. It's the parasite. It's the toxin. So noted a report in 1919 that the thought of the pathologist immediately turns natural, just naturally, to such positive causative associations and seems to believe with difficulty in causation prefixed with a minus sign. So today, modern medicine takes a look at you and they say, oh my God, you've got cancer. And so they're looking for a gene in your body that causes this cancer. Now, that's great. I mean, it could well be that you've got a genetic predisposition to cancer, but I think that a more logical explanation would be this. You got breast cancer. Your mother died from breast cancer, and your grandma died from breast cancer. Has it ever occurred to you that you today eat the same diet that you learned to eat from your mother, who learned to eat that diet from her mother, who learned to eat that diet from her mother? I'll give you a little illustration. I came from a family on the north coast of California that ate a lot of pork, fat, and unclean meats. The longest living Gordon in the history of the Gordon family, dating back to 1898. I can't go beyond 1898. I don't know a thing about him. But in five generations from 1898, that is my great-granddad, then my grandfather, and then my father, and then me, and then I've got a boy. So in five generations, I'm the longest living Gordon. I'm almost 70. I haven't quite got my 70, but I have high hopes now. I'm getting close. And all the other Gordons, and not just in our family, but everybody named Gordon, that's my grandfather's brothers and sisters, my great-grandfather's brothers and sisters, all died, almost all of them died from coronary disease. In fact, I don't know of any Gordon that ever died from anything other than coronary disease, save for my dad who was killed in a car wreck, which is pretty rare. All the rest of us die from heart attack and stroke and so on, caused by, guess what, high-fat and unclean meat diet. Now, I changed the diet. I'm the only Gordon, to my knowledge, that doesn't eat fat, doesn't eat pork, doesn't eat unclean meat. All the rest of them are still eating pig, and they're pig-eating Christians. And now let's take a look at them as time progresses along. That's what I've been doing. I just take a look and watch. I watch people and see how they live, and see how what the results are that they get. And we notice that in families, that cancer is pervasive in certain families. And I guess people haven't been able to figure out yet that the people are eating what their predecessors ate. So the medical community comes along and they don't place any weight at all with diet. Everybody is suffering from a drug deficiency, and so that's why the doctor is constantly prescribing more and more drugs, is because you obviously have a drug deficiency. You're short of cortisone. You're short of Vioxx, and so they keep selling you these drugs. It doesn't increase your longevity. It doesn't increase your health. It doesn't benefit your health any. In fact, Joel Wallach here points out that the average medical doctor dies at age 58. The average Joe Sixpack dies at age 75. Now, why we would want to go to a profession of people who die 20 years early, I don't know. We do. I'm not quite sure why. Doesn't make any sense. It isn't logical, but then not everybody is a Spock. Now, this biochemical theory, among the diseases to which this new and novel concept could be applied, for instance, was marasmus, or starvation of babies in poor areas, muscle wasting, fat loss, and significant loss of body weight. Another was called quashiorkor, Kwashi Orkor, found in tropical Africa, characterized by muscle wasting and edema, enlarged liver, diarrhea, and lassitude. Well, in 1755, a fellow by the name of Gaspar Causal, C-A-S-A-L, published an account of pellagra. Pellagra, as we know today, is a vitamin B3 deficiency. But then, it was a new disease in Spain called pellagra. Pellagra is characterized by the three D's, including dermatitis, which is a terrible crust, a dry, scabby, crossed with cracks, you know, on your skin. Diarrhea, and dementia, and then premature death. This disease flared up every spring. Well, Causal noticed that pellagra's victims were poor, and that cornmeal was their staple food, and they had little or no access to meat or milk. The same problem of pellagra existed in the poor people of Italy. Various theories were offered for the cause of pellagra. The main one was the limited diet of corn. Maize was a New World plant that had been brought back to the Mediterranean area of Europe by the Spanish conquistadors. A French physician writing in 1845 suggested that the predisposing cause of pellagra was a diet with too few animal products and that the efficient cause was bad maize. In 1865, a Mexican doctor pointed out that pellagra was not a problem in Mexico, even though maize was the staple food of the peasants who lived there. He believed that the reason that pellagra was avoided in Mexico was in the habit of soaking the maize in wood ashes before cooking, which had a disinfectant effect. By contrast, the European method of baking corn mush into polenta left it contaminated with molds and toxins. Some theorized that pellagra was an insect-borne disease like malaria and yellow fever, carried by flies from the feces of the people who had pellagra to the meals of future victims. Well, Hungarian-born Joseph Goldfinger of the U.S. Public Health Service observed that an orphanage in mental asylums where the inmates developed pellagra, the staff, naturally eating a wider variety of food, escaped the disease. But when eggs and milk were added to the diet of the affected individuals, pellagra disappeared. Goldfinger started a prisoner volunteer test in which he fed the participants only cornmeal. When dermatitis developed, he theorized that pellagra was due to a lack of dietary factors. In the early 20th century, pellagra was so common in the southern part of the United States. 20,000 cases were reported in Georgia alone during its peak. The affected patients' diets were all limited to corn and pork fat. A system of federal retardation centers was established for isolating pellagra patients who were thought to be infectious in a similar fashion to tuberculosis. In 1849, Thomas Addison reported the existence of a hitherto unknown fatal anemia that was eventually called pernicious anemia, and it was characterized by a low red blood cell count, but the cells that were observed were enlarged red blood cells. Vitamin B12 was eventually identified as the missing essential nutrient. However, there was another feature unique to pernicious anemia. The stomach had to produce two important substances, stomach acid and, two, an acid-dependent cofactor known as intrinsic factor. Without either or both, vitamin B12 could not be absorbed. And it was learned that vitamin B12 injections could, by bypassing the stomach, be utilized to prevent and cure pernicious anemia. Stomach acid substitutes, for example, betaine, HCI or HCl, could be used as a supplement to activate intrinsic factor and encourage the absorption of vitamin B12. Beriberi is Sinhalese for I cannot, was a common disease in the Asian rice cultures. Beriberi was characterized by a weakness in the legs, hands, arms, and congestive heart failure. Death resulted from pulmonary edema and abdominal dropsy. In 1882, a Japanese naval vessel was sent on a long training tour with a starting crew of 275 sailors. 60% of the crew developed beriberi and 25 died. Dr. Takaki, T-A-K-A-K-I, a German-trained naval surgeon, noted that the protein content of their diet was far below the German standard, and he quickly proposed that the protein content be increased. On a second voyage the next year, Takaki modified the sailors' diet by exchanging half of the rice with barley, and he added milk, beef, and tofu. Beriberi did not appear, and no deaths occurred. Takaki reported that he had prevented beriberi by increasing the protein in the diet. Now, I reported to you here a program or two back that I had a pig farmer down here. He had the very same thing. He had pigs, healthy, good-looking pigs, but that they would just fall over and die. So they went to the university and they autopsied the pigs, and they found out they were suffering from protein deficiency. The corn that was in the ConAgra ration, just field corn, brought it in, ground it up, fed it to the pigs, only had 6% protein. So the pigs were not getting enough protein, and as a result of that, they just fell over and died. They were suffering from beriberi. Right now, what we've taken a look at here so far is deficiency diseases. These are common, they're well known. All diseases are caused by these deficiencies. Your doctor isn't going to tell you that. And he isn't going to tell you that because it's fairly simple. Let's suppose that you came down with scurvy and I said, oh, you get a vitamin C deficiency. Just go get a vitamin C, bottle of vitamin C. You could go to the drugstore. You could go to a health food store, for that matter, and buy a bottle of vitamin C, start taking vitamin C, and you'll see the scurvy goes away. You could come in with beriberi, and I would say, oh, what you need is vitamin B12. What you need is protein. All of these diseases follow the same pattern. You're overweight, you got a calcium deficiency. You got more than a calcium deficiency, but you got a calcium deficiency. I showed you that in the last program. That if you just replace one hamburger a day with 1200 milligrams of calcium, 65% of you people will lose that weight. No, I'm not here to sell vitamins. I don't care whether you buy them or not. But, you know, people call the law school constantly, and they complain about their sicknesses and their infirmities, and they'll say, well, I heard you on the radio say this or that or something else. And, you know, and I say, okay, well, yeah, I said that. Well, what am I going to do about this? Well, I don't know what you're going to do about it. You know, that's your choice in life, not mine. I don't have some duty to persuade you people that I'm right and you're wrong. An investigative journalist isn't an advocate for the story that he's putting on the air or he's putting in the newspaper. He goes out, researches it, and brings the facts to the table and says, oh, okay, here's what causes scurvy, vitamin C deficiency. Now go to the doctor with scurvy and he'll put you on some kind of a drug. Now, the drug will contain vitamin C. The cause of scurvy is vitamin C deficiency. So you go to the doctor, he prescribes this drug, it's going to cost you several hundred dollars. He'll put you on this regimen, you know, for several weeks or several months. He'll keep you on this drug as long as possible. He'll keep you coming back to the doctor's office for checkups. You don't need the checkups, you don't need the doctor's visits, you don't need the drug, we need vitamin C. And it doesn't make any difference whether you go out in the garden and you pick some peppers and tomatoes or you go down to the health food store and you get a bottle of vitamin C, or you go to the doctor and you get an expensive drug and you pay him a lot of money. It's irrelevant. If you want to get over the scurvy, you got to have vitamin C. It's what causes it. That's what cures it. It's no big mystery. Everybody knows it. Well, I say everybody. Everybody in the know knows it. But most people aren't in the know. And they don't teach this in public school. They're not teaching you this in high school, college. Hell, they don't even teach it in medical school. And that's because the money is in selling drugs. The money is in selling doctor's visits at the doctor's office. That's where the money's at. It's not in selling vitamin C. And it's certainly not in keeping people from getting scurvy or keeping them from getting pellagra or something else. Now, you got 450 diseases running around out here, boys and girls, and all of them are caused by either one, you have a toxin. Which is caused, what's this cause and effect relationship? You got a kid that's got lead poisoning. As a result of this lead poisoning, he can't learn. He's got ADD and he's mentally retarded or whatever. And your kid, he's running around and he's eating the paint off of the walls. He goes over to the windowsill and he chews on the windowsill. And then he ingests this lead-borne paint. So we say, oh, here's what the problem is. The problem is the lead in the paint. Boys and girls, we've had lead in paint for hundreds of years. And people weren't eating the windowsills in 1900. So something happened between 1900 and 2000 that caused all of these young children here in America especially to run around eating the lead paint off the walls. It is true, he's got lead poisoning. We ought to ask the next step in the question, or the next logical question would be, why is this kid eating the paint off the walls? Because he has pica. Why does he have pica? Because he has a mineral deficiency, and he's trying to satisfy that mineral deficiency by eating that lead paint. It's salty, or there's something about it that he likes. I told you about the little girl that I observed. She'd go around and eat all the matches, you know, the burned off ends of the matches, and the ashes out of the ashtrays. She had a mineral deficiency. So instead of eating the lead paint off of the windowsill, she was eating the ashes out of the ashtrays. All right, so there's another cause here. We've got toxin. We got lead in the paint. That's a toxin which is caused by pica, which is caused by mineral deficiency. To solve this child's problem, you don't need to take the lead out of the paint. You need to feed the child. This child's starving to death. And you know, you people are running around here spending tons of money on Captain Crunch. Captain Crunch doesn't have nutrients in it. And I know somebody's going to say, well, they've got the nutrients added. I covered that for you the other day. The nutrients added. Let's try it. Go take a nail, take it into a grinder, and grind off a bunch of filings. Then take the filings and put it in your Captain Crunch. Just spread it on there with your CNH pure cane sugar. And you'll say, well, I get plenty of iron because I take a nail every morning and I grind it up and then I eat it in my Captain Crunch. But it can't be assimilated by your body. It's true, you're ingesting lots of iron. But until the iron has been ingested first by the plant, and then you eat the plant, the iron isn't available to your tissue, your body. So one of the deceptions is that they put these additives into your food, but they're not assimilable by your body. And that's because they're chemicals. They're not biologic in their origin. So there's another little piece to the problem over here. So you keep eating and eating and eating more and more Captain Crunch, and you're still hungry. You're always looking for something more to eat, and that's because you don't have any minerals, and you don't have the minerals because the minerals are no longer available in the soil. And I showed you that in the last program. I said, you know, we lost 50% of the nutritional value of our food from 1917 to 37, another 57 from 37 to 75, and another 50% from 1975 to 2000. We're down to about 80, we've lost 87.5%. We're down to the last 12.5%. There isn't enough food value in the food that you're eating. These prepared foods, these foods that you're buying Captain Crunch and Quaker, this or that, and you know, it's just foodless food, grown with bad seed, with bad fertilizer, on bad ground, and you get bad food, and then you eat it, and then wonder why you've got symptoms. Joel Wallach answers that question in Hell's Kitchen. Goes a step further and says, well, it's simple enough to solve the problem. Eat ashes. I know, you're going to sit there and say, well, you're nuts. Oh, no. Wallach said, take a mineral block. This is the way we do it in animals. We don't have enough profit margin in a dairy cow to feed this cow foodless food, let the cow develop diabetes, and then shoot the cow up every day, you know, with insulin. Take her blood sample every day. We don't have the time, effort, and energy to do that. So what we do is we give her a mineral block. Like the Hunses, we feed them minerals so that they get all the minerals that they can possibly take into their bodies. And then they don't get sick. And then if they don't get sick, then we don't have to spend any money, you know, on the veterinarians and the doctors. Humans are a little different. We spend thousands and thousands of dollars. In fact, the average American today is spending $1,200 a year on medical services. That's the average. Take 300 million people, multiply it times 1,200, and you'll get about $1.6 trillion. And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults. Notice that, for adults, not children. And we do that on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website. Now, oftentimes people call and say, I want to send my child to your school. I tell them, no, don't waste your time. He can't learn anything. Most people, until they get to be about age 30, they can't learn much. You don't get good sense until you're 30. And my observation is you're just wasting your time, effort, and energy. You're wasting your money sending a 18-year-old kid here to law school. They don't learn anything. Their minds are just totally taken up by girls and cars. Girls and cars, that's all they can think about. Now, once they get to be about 30, you know, if you're an adult and you get to be about 30, 40, 50 years old, you know, now your brain starts to function. You can probably do some constructive. That's why I say we have a homeschooling program for adults, but we don't for children. The Law Hour website is updated every week, and it has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like any of these programs, they're on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. You can just download them right off the Internet. Don't cost anything. That does not, by any stretch of the imagination, take the place of our 8 schools. I mean, if you want to learn something, you got to go to school. If you want to learn general information, our radio program's out there free of charge. If you want to get specific and put it to practice, well, then you might have to know a little more. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, current events. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order your introductory CD package, it's free of charge. Just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, they're accurate, and they're correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. That's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website is georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Alright, the cause and effect relationship revealed here in Hell's Kitchen. Hell of a story. About 350 pages long. You can get a copy of it. It's 384 pages. You can get a copy direct from the author, whose name is Joel, J-O-E-L, Wallach. They got a webpage too. You can get them on their webpage at www.drjwallach.com. Now that's all one word, drjwallach.com. The book was $18.95. Or you can call, you know, if you got a telephone, 1-800-755-4656. 1-800-755-4656. Now, I always recommend this new bookstore that I discovered down in Austin, Texas. It's called the BraveNewBookstore.com. BraveNewBookstore.com. And they're at 512-480-2503. Again, that's area code 512-480-2503. They're down in Austin, Texas. They carry the book. In fact, they're the ones that sent it to me and said, hey, would you review this? And so I do. And then, of course, I plug their bookstore and say, well, if you want a copy, you can get it from Barnes & Noble, probably Amazon.com. You can get it from the author. It's current. I think it was first published about 2004. Let me see if I'm right. No, it's their first edition, January 2005. Copyright December 2004 by Dr. Joel Wallach. Put out by Wellness Publications, LLC. Wellness Publications, probably self-published by Dr. Wallach himself. All right, now in the 1890s, a guy by the name of Christian E-I-J-K-M-A-N, he was a Dutch physician. I don't know how exactly to pronounce that name. E. Jukeman, I guess it is, a Dutch physician and the director of the research laboratory in Batavia, Jakarta, was also overwhelmed with the beriberi cases, and it was theorized that beriberi was due to a bacterial infection. So an army of bacteriologists were sent from the Netherlands to identify the germ. The Eichmann noticed the hospital chickens developed polyneuritis beriberi when they were fed the same white rice that was being eaten by the people with beriberi instead of their standard brown rice chicken feed. Well, when Eichmann, E-I-J-K-M-A-N, fed whole brown rice to the affected chickens, they quickly recovered. He theorized that there was a toxin in the polished white rice and that the antidote was in the polishing, or rice bran. So his colleague, Gerrit Grijens, had a different theory. He believed that there was some essential substance in the rice that was being destroyed by heat. And he proposed that both diseases, the fowl polyneuritis and the human beriberi, were due to the same absence from the diet of some factor present in the rice polishings. So, Eichmann mailed a questionnaire to all of Java's prisons, inquiring on the incidence of beriberi, the physical environment, and the diet. The questionnaire revealed no relationship between the rate of beriberi and the environment. However, the disease was a significant problem in 71% of the prisons using white rice and only 3% in those using rough or brown rice. So in 1906, Axel Holst, H-O-L-S-T, an Oslo bacteriologist, was sent to study beriberi, which had become a problem in Norwegian sailors. In a simple experiment, he fed guinea pigs on different kinds of flour. The entire population of guinea pigs died in 30 days. He further found that by simply adding cabbage or lemon juice supplements to their diet, the guinea pigs all flourished and avoided the disease. Well, the same year, Frederick Hopkins of Cambridge fed young rats on casein, lard, starch, sugar, and salts, minerals. Supposedly everything essential to health, he added milk to the diet of one subgroup and found that only those receiving the milk thrived. Astonishingly, small amounts of certain substances in food, accessory food factors, were essential. He concluded for the body to utilize protein and energy for growth, the key to nutrition, he concluded, lay in these missing links. So in 1912, a guy by the name of Casimir Funk, a Polish-born biochemist, advanced the deficiency theory by isolating the active substances in rice bran that would prevent beriberi. And he named these dietary factors or missing link vital amines, A-M-I-N-E-S, later shortened to vitamins. In 1920, it was learned that not all vitamins were amines. Funk went on to link vitamin deficiencies to beriberi, scurvy, pellagra, and rickets. The theoretical basis for nutritional supplementation had finally been scientifically established. The deficiency theory was beginning to collect a weight of evidence and to take on a shape that all can understand. All facts were pointing to the likelihood that scurvy, beriberi, pellagra, and rickets could be caused by dietary deficiencies of essential factors in the diet. Rickets was a disease described in the 17th century by Francis Gleason. It had become widespread and a significant problem in the industrializing cities using coal as a fuel. Well, in 1890, Theobald A. Palm reported on rickets. It is in the narrow alleys and haunts and playgrounds of the children of the poor that the victims of rickets are to be found in abundance. And he recommended sunlight to prevent and reverse rickets. In 1900, it was estimated that in Boston, 80% of the children under 2, 25% of the children from poor families demonstrated signs of rickets. Dr. David Paul von Hansmann of Berlin believed rickets was due to a lack of fresh air, sunlight, and exercise. Edward Mellenby induced rickets in puppies by feeding them diets lacking a factor found in certain animal fats. Supplementing the puppies with cod liver oil prevented and reversed the rickets. Mellenby attributed rickets to a deficiency of a fat-soluble factor he called vitamin A. By then, various researchers demonstrated that rickets could be prevented and cured by exposing the sufferer to sunlight or by supplementing with cod liver oil. All right, so I've just covered four deficiency diseases here, and the cause and effect relationship. Now just multiply that by another 446, and you'll have it. See how simple that is? Now, if you want to run out here and buy all these vitamins and minerals, you know, I see people doing this all the time. I had a guy here not too long ago, here at the school. And he had a little box. Then it said Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And this little box had these little compartments. And he would put all of his pills in these little compartments. And then on Monday, he'd take all of the Monday pills. And on Tuesday, he'd take all the Tuesday pills and so on. I looked at that guy and I kind of shook my head a little bit. Now, he's in pretty good health. You know, I'm not suggesting that he's in bad health, but wouldn't we all be better off, better served, if we could get our vitamins and minerals in our milk and in our rice? For instance, you know, when you go to the store and you buy white rice, don't you buy white polished rice? You know, like Rice-A-Roni, you know, the San Francisco treat. Isn't that what you buy? Well, here's what they're doing. You take rice, and it's brown in color. See, it isn't bright, shiny white, you know. It's kind of a yucky swill kind of color to it. And I can't tell if there's much difference in the taste of white rice or brown rice, but we buy brown rice here. After having read this, when I buy rice, I buy brown rice. And the brown rice may not have as much in the way of vitamins and minerals as it ought to, but after you've taken the bran off of it and polished it, we know from experience that it doesn't have any nutritional value left. Now, you know, you can make up your own mind as to what kind of rice you want to buy, but you don't have to be real smart to figure out that if you could eat the brown rice instead of the white rice, you would get the nutrients that you need off of the bran and the hull and so on that's on this brown rice. And you wouldn't need all these pills. Now, I try to eat a pretty natural diet. I live here on a farm, and I produce a lot of the food that we eat here. And we have, as a result of that, pretty good health here. Not perfect per se, but, you know, pretty good. And then I recommend to our students, you know, they call here and they say, hey, I'm sick, I've got this or that disease. And I say, well, you're starving to death. You know, give up the white rice and supplant it with brown rice. You don't, it doesn't take a whole bunch to do that. The same thing is true when you're buying food in the store. You know, Oreo cookies taste good. I don't deny it. God, if God made anything better than an Oreo cookie, I don't know what it would be. Maybe sex. That was a pretty good invention, too. But, you know, if your food is processed, well, it's probably not very good. And all of the baked goods are made from white flour. Now, they do the same thing with wheat that they do to the rice. They polish it. And they give you the white flour. That's what makes Winchell's Dunkin' Donuts, you know, and Krispy Kremes taste so good. You know, they got the refined flour. Refined flour and refined sugar. God, that tastes good, especially when you're washing it down, you know, with a cup of Folgers coffee, you know. Maybe sweetened with CNH pure cane sugar with some artificial creamer. Maybe with some NutraSweet or something like that. God, that tastes good. And then people come down with these terrible symptoms, you know, debilitating symptoms, and then they can't figure out for the life of them why, and they go to the doctor. And the doctor, who ought to know, doesn't tell them the answer. He doesn't tell them, well, you got rickets, or you got pellagra, you got this or that or something else. They hang some fancy name on it. You know, some word that's got five or six syllables. Notice in the early days, they didn't have the kind of names that they've got today. So they just called it the missing element. It was missing something. I didn't know what it was. Frank Rocha used to say, it doesn't have its strength. Doesn't have strength in it. He didn't know what the hell a vitamin or a mineral was. He just knew the food didn't have its strength. Well, okay, so we can send you to college and come back. Oh, it's missing vitamin A. And therefore, you're getting pellagra. I don't think Frank could have pronounced pellagra. He didn't know. So, you know, the doctor, he's no dummy. He's a salesman. He's out here selling drugs. And it just so happens that the drug that comes from Merck or Pfizer has some vitamin C in it, and that'll cure your scurvy. It'll cure your pellagra. But it costs a lot of money. Now, you can go to the medical doctors if you want to. That's your choice in life. They can solve the problem. But just so that you know what caused the problem was caused by starvation. That's what's causing your obesity. It's starvation. And it's made very, very plain here in this book called Hell's Kitchen. He goes on, and in fact, they've got a list of about 60 of these vital minerals that you have to have. And probably another 20 or 30 diseases in here that they'll tell you, like diabetes. That's a deficiency. Diabetes is a mineral deficiency, and you can cure diabetes, by the way. So if you're a diabetic and you've got diabetes, if you get this book, Hell's Kitchen, it won't solve your diabetes problem, but it'll put you on the right track. First thing you got to do is wean yourself from the medical doctor. See, the medical doctor makes his money by selling insulin. He doesn't make his money by keeping people healthy. If everybody in America was healthy,
the doctors would all starve to death. Healthy people don't go to doctors. They don't have any need. And so it's necessary then to promote foods that are mineral and vitamin deficient. They taste real good, and they keep emphasizing how good Oreo cookies taste. How good a Big Mac tastes. How good McDonald's French fries taste. I don't deny it. Hell, they taste real good. But they're deficient in vitamins and minerals, and if you continually eat a diet of McDonald's, it'll kill you. That's the bottom line. You'll die from it. Now, typically here in America, before we die, we get pain, and we go to the doctor with our pain. The doctor, then he doesn't tell you to stay off the McDonald's. He just remains silent. He sells you drugs, and then you continue to eat at McDonald's, which continues the deficiency, and he keeps selling you the vitamins or minerals that you need in the form of a drug, which contains the nutrient that you need. He doesn't, you know, when you go to the doctor and you get this drug, it doesn't say to you, you know, like Viagra, for instance. Do you know why it is that you men cannot get an erection? It's because your arteries and veins are plugged up with plaque caused by eating pig. You know, among other things, not the only source of fat, but primarily. So the pharmaceutical industry comes along and they just say, well, they're not going to tell you, well, stop eating fat, don't eat pig, follow the Ten Commandments, obey God and keep His commandments. No, there's no money in that. The money is in selling Viagra, which you could accomplish by taking red pepper. You know, just take some cayenne pepper. That'll dilate your blood vessels. So the pharmaceutical guy, he goes out, I don't know what's in Viagra per se, but I'll just bet you that it's loaded with the same chemical that you find in red pepper, which dilates your blood vessels. So if you're having a heart attack, you know, us poor guys out here that don't have all the training in medicine, what we would take is red pepper. And then, you know, if you're having a problem, you know, with your sexual dysfunction over here, I take red pepper. Boy, it works like a shot. Then I'm an old man, you know. I don't take Viagra. What the hell do I need Viagra for? My wife is pushing 70 also. We don't need Viagra to have sex, for crying out loud. Sometimes people, they get surprised and they say, oh! It's almost like Judy Hartson going, oh! She'd gasp in horror as she would run off to tell Mr. Witt about some indiscretion that I had committed. That's what people do, you know, they gasp in horror and say, oh my God, that Gordon is still doing it and he's 70 years old. All right, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember that the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order one, just call us and ask. You know, it's no big deal. Just get on the horn and call and say, hey, I'd like to have that CD package you offered. You know, it's free. Send me one. The number to call, 417-273-4900. 67. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And then the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.